leaders are your top priority. Number one, be convinced that your leaders are your top priority. Now, this is sometimes difficult for youth and children's workers, and I'll tell you why. I don't think many people become children's workers because they want to work with leaders. They become children's workers because they want to work with children. Most youth workers don't become youth workers because they've got a passion to work with leaders. They become youth workers because they've got a passion to work with teenagers. But you know that if it's just you and a bunch of kids, it ain't going anywhere. If you're going to have a ministry that grows and develops, then developing your leadership team actually is your top priority. Because if you fail to do that, then you're going to have a very short-lived and stunted ministry, no matter what sort of a whiz-bang worker you are. Because if it's just you and a bunch of kids, you are going to be limited to how many kids that you can relate to. Or if it's just you and a bunch of kids and you leave after 3 years, the whole thing collapses. So one of the things I've had to almost force myself to do, because I got into youth ministry because I love teenagers. I love being with teenagers. I've been to some of your churches and met some of your teenagers. They're just fantastic people. And I was in a smaller church to start with, and it really was me and all the kids. But as it grew and as I moved to a larger church, I had to make sure that my leadership team became my top priority. Now, if you've got a large leadership team, it's the first circle of leaders underneath you. We've got, I don't know, 80, 90 youth leaders in our church at the moment. As youth pastor, I didn't try to care for every single one of them, but there are about 12 team leaders that lead the various teams, and I care for them. If you're wondering biblically why I'm saying your leadership team is your top priority, here is the reason. That's what Jesus did. Jesus' mission was to reach the world with his message. If you work out how he spent his time in his 3 years of ministry, he invested it into his leadership team. So there's your starting point. I just want you to know that if you're going to look after your leaders, they're the top priority. Have you ever been in a church with a dynamic minister who's a fantastic preacher, but he's sort of a one-man band and doesn't actually sow into and build up and develop leaders? It might be a great church, but it's only centered on one person, and that makes it incredibly fragile. So make sure they're your top priority, and make sure that they know that they are your top priority. Number two, be slow to appoint leaders. Somebody comes along, puts their hand up and says, Do you want some help with your children's group? And you're thinking, thank you, Jesus. And you sign them up before you've asked any questions of them. This is a sheep that we give to our leaders to help them to be slow to appoint leaders. And I'll just rattle off some of the questions. Some of them are dead obvious, but some of them we don't ask them. Number one, are they a Christian? Can I just suggest that's worth finding out? And don't take their word for it. Ask their small group leader. Oh, you're not in a small group yet. Okay, how about we get you into a small group first, let's see how you go, and then come back to us in 3 months and we'll talk about leadership. Does that make sense? So you need to check with someone. Have they been a Christian for a reasonable time? Say at least 1 to 2 years. Okay, the Bible says don't appoint someone to leadership who's a recent convert. Give them some time to grow. Are they growing in strength and maturity? Are they showing the fruit of the Spirit? Would you be happy if students started living their Christian lives like this leader is living their Christian life? That's a question you've got to ask. They don't have to be perfect, but they've got to be going in the right direction. Can you see any obvious areas of weakness or sin that they don't appear to be turning away from? Do they have a healthy understanding and openness to their own strengths and weaknesses? I'm sorry this has gone a bit fast, I only have one copy of this. I'll let you leave it in the bookstore if you want to go back and have a look at it. And we might be able to persuade Alison to do some copies for us. These are just questions we give to our leaders before they appoint other leaders. And there's a whole lot of things there. Have they established themselves as a committed member of this congregation? Like somebody comes from another church and shows up and on their first Sunday, they happen to let slip that they helped with the children's or youth ministry at their last church, and man, you've got them signed up for that next Friday. Give them time to settle into your church. They might find they're not happy in your church. So when you show up at my church and you say, hey, I was a full-time youth pastor in a thriving church in England, I say, fantastic. Let me help you settle in. Let's see how you go here. Check back with us in another 3 months and tell us how you go. And if you've worked out this is your Christian home, this is the place where you want to grow and commit yourself, then we're happy to talk to you about leadership. There's also an emotional stability you're looking for. Do they have an excessively strong need to be in a position of ministry? That's something you want to find out as you spend a bit of time with them. But some people get into ministry to fulfil their own needs. So that's just a few things. I'll leave that sheet in the bookstore if you want to have a look at it. It's called Selecting Leaders, and you can copy stuff down from that. And by the way, if anyone wants stuff and I can't give it to them, if you allow me to get back to Australia, which I will on February the 6th, if you go to hawkinsministry.com, there's an email thing there. Anything I'm referring to, I can actually send you as an email attachment, if that helps you. Okay, so number one, be convinced that your youth leaders are top priority. Number two, be slow to appoint leaders. Number three, sow into your leaders' spiritual life. This is the number one thing you've got to do for anyone who's on your leadership team. Have some input into their spiritual life. It might mean that there's somebody else in your church who's doing that, a small group leader or a pastoral leader, but you know that what's in their heart is going to be reproduced into your students. So if you want to have great youth ministry, it really matters that you're sowing into your spiritual lives of your leaders and keeping them fresh and vital and obedient and faithful. You can work out some of the ways of doing that, but it really matters. Number four, you're thinking there's only 10 of these, but I'm going to slow down on a couple of them shortly. Yes, sir, Mark.
Does it have to be you sowing into them?
Doesn't have to be you, but you need to ensure it's happening. So let's imagine they're in an adult small group. Then I would check up with their small group leader from time to time how they're going and just make sure that we're feeding them. They're going to give out in ministry. You want to make sure you're feeding them. Make sense? Number four, give your leaders a clear biblical vision. They need to know where the ministry is heading. They need to know what they're meant to achieve. If they sign up to be a youth club leader, and that's all they know, they're leading a youth club, and they don't know what the youth club's meant to achieve, they don't know where you expect to be in 12 months, they don't know what your spiritual outcome is, they'll be frustrated. They'll show up and do the job, but they actually won't know where it's meant to be heading. If you've done the work and done the work with your Bible, then you'll have a biblical vision that we're going to be a youth ministry that makes disciples and are going to change nations. The reason we run the youth group is so our Christian kids can invite their friends to follow Jesus. One of our main focuses I want you to do at the youth group is to develop relationships with the teenagers who come and seek to lead them to Christ through our discussion groups. Something like that. So they actually know why they're there, they know what they're meant to achieve, and they know where they should be in another 12 months. I don't know if you've ever been on a team and you've not been quite sure where the team's going or what they're meant to be doing. It's very hard for you to throw in with your heart and soul. So give your leaders a clear biblical vision. Give your leaders operational guidelines. Now, this one can solve lots of problems.
I'm assuming that that would be just ongoing, you know.
And vision one?
Yeah.
Yes, it's not a once-off.
Yeah, because we just think we started off, you know, with our youth club, and half the leaders were there, and they heard the stimulating talk. Might hear from the next meeting.
Yep.
And I'm trying to distill that into the other leaders as well. We've got to keep playing the drums.
Absolutely. If I had a leading only half my leaders there, I'd be looking to change that culture. Now, I realise there's all sorts of problems with that, but I want to raise the bar, the expectation that what we do matters and you should be there, and we're not going to do anything that doesn't matter. We're not here to fill your diary up, but when we have something which is crucial, you know about it and you're there. But you're right, even if they're all there, you've got to keep adjusting where you're going to fit the vision. It has to be part of the culture, the way you even talk about things. You're sitting down at the end of the night. So, how did the youth group go? Oh, it was great. I met some new kids from the local high school. Fantastic. So, what is it we're meant to be achieving again? Okay, how are we going to move those kids a bit closer? What can we do to help you do that? So it's a constant adjustment, constant refocusing. Because can I tell you, us human beings have a natural atrophy where we lose sight of the big picture and just focus on the small picture. So you might be excited about raising disciples who will change the world, but give your youth group a couple of months, the youth leaders will settle for running a program that the kids don't read. So you've always got to keep their sight on what they're achieving, because human beings naturally go back to the lowest common denominator. They're just doing the job, and it gets them through week by week. Excellent. That was number four. Give your leaders clear biblical vision. Number five, give them operational guidelines. This one gets overlooked. But you're asking someone to be a leader on your team. There's Ken down there, and we're thinking, Ken, why don't you, if you could help us with our youth group? And Ken, being an obliging sort of a chap, and, you know, obviously incredibly gifted and skilled and godly, says, sure. And I say, okay, show up, the youth group starts at 7:30, should get there about 7, and we'll take it from there. He doesn't know what he's committed to. Do we meet every Friday night? Do we meet once a month? Do we have planning meetings? Is he expected till midnight? Will he get off at 10 o'clock? Is he meant to put in preparation time at some other stage? And so when we are asking people to become leaders, we actually give them a sheet which, as near as possible, specifies what that will mean each week. Let's imagine you're going to be a crossfire leader. Crossfire is our Friday night youth group. So we'll actually say what time crossfire starts, what time it finishes, and that it's on every Friday of school term, and it doesn't operate during school holidays. It will say we have a meeting beforehand, which starts at this time, and we have a meeting after it, which finishes at this time. So you know when you're starting and when you finish. If you're leading one of our Bible study groups, we'll be saying something like, okay, here's your time structure for the week. You will need to commit about 2 hours to being actually in the group. It might be an hour and a half, and there's a bit of travel time, but 2 hours of your life will be spent actually leading this Bible study group every week. We expect that you'll be preparing the Bible study, which will probably take you another hour during the week. We're up to 3 hours. We expect that you will be catching up with one of those kids each week just to check out how they're going. Milkshake after school, supper after church, something like that, where you can just spend a bit of time with them. That's another hour a week. And so we're actually writing this down so that when you're saying yes, you actually know what you're saying yes to. Some of the times we do our leaders a disservice, we just sign them up and we don't tell them. At the beginning of the year, we give out a list of dates and say, here is every meeting and function for the year that we want you at. Now, occasionally something goes wrong and we've got to change it. But I hate having to throw something extra in that wasn't on their original sheet. Now, they won't read the original sheet, and they'll lose it, and they'll say, you never told me. But I still want to honour them and give it out at the beginning, so that when we're saying, don't forget, our once a quarter planning meeting is on next Sunday, You all know about that one, don't you? We had it on your original sheet at the beginning of the year. Are there any problems with people being there? Otherwise, you keep pulling things out of a hat and expecting that they show up, and that's probably a little unfair. So if you want to look after your leaders, then give them operational guidelines. We have... Look, I didn't bring one with me, but I managed to find a computer and ran it off my USB stick. This is a manual we give to every leader, and I'll leave a copy of it in the bookstore. Once again, if you email me, I'll send you one.
My commitment as a group leader.
We just go through lots of exciting stuff. Crossfire Ministry Team. Oh, this is done in a funky font, which the computer I used didn't have up here. So this is Arial, but it's done in Marydale. We are a team of Christians who have a real passion. That is, I'm trying to involve their heart in where we go. We have a passion for Jesus, we have a passion to reach youth, we have a passion to make disciples, and to achieve this passion, we are prepared as leaders to make a commitment to ministry.
Our passion for commitment.
And this just spells it out. As well as our normal commitment as a disciple to regular weekly involvement at Church of St. Paul's and our regular personal time and walk with God. In addition to that, here's the basic commitment for all youth leaders. And it just goes through what we're expecting of them. What we're expecting of first year leaders, how important our camp is, and they need to commit to that. And we ask for a commitment for 2 years. Now, depending on your demographics, you see what you can get away with. But our aim is, in your first year, you're learning. In your second year, you'll begin to fly. So if I only come to you with 1 year, you actually never get them at their best. And we say, if you stay for the third year, man, you'll love it. We have plenty of leaders on our team who have been doing it 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Depends on your demographics and when everyone moves away from your part of town, but we try to get people for a 2 year commitment, if we can.
Can I just ask a question? I've been in my job for about 4 months. What do you do if you inherit leaders who are not holding to these things?
I love that question. That is a brilliant question. Because that was what I walked into 19 years ago. Established leaders who said, what do you mean we're going to have training? We don't need training. We've been doing this a couple of years. Why do we need training? Here's what I don't know if this is the only way. You can use a Machiavellian approach if you wish, and you eliminate all your enemies in the first 12 months. I just don't know that's a wise way forward. But what I did was, I started with all new leaders. All new leaders joining the team, I secured a higher level of commitment than the existing leaders. Now, some interesting. The existing leaders who were ready for that higher commitment came on board, and some didn't. I don't know if this is the right way, but over a period of time, the percentages changed. And as time rolled on, the new breed of leaders came in on a new understanding. In fact, I had a 3-year run-up. Because when I went to my church, I had 70 youth leaders I inherited. They were great people, but they were well entrenched in how they did things. They didn't want some new youth pastor telling them what to do. And I used to put on these most wonderful leadership nights. You know, once a term, we'd get together on a Saturday night and we'd have some food, we'd have some praise and worship, some dynamic teaching on leadership. About half would come, no matter what I did. And so I started, I thought, okay, the McDonald's approach. Yes, I've used the McDonald's approach. The average family in Australia, family with children, takes their kids to McDonald's on an average of once a week. Now, how did McDonald's achieve that? 25 years ago, they targeted the kids and got the kids to want to go, and now those kids have become parents and they take their children. So I started with, who are the people who are keen to learn about leadership? High schools. So I went for the year 10s and the year 11s. That's not the last year of school, it's the two before that. And I said, okay, We're going to offer a year of leadership training to people in high school. If you're in a Bible study group, why don't you sign up for a year of leadership training with us? I won't go into the details of it. You'll find it in if it will last. But we train them for 1 or 2 years, and they would come back to me and say, you know that training you gave us? Some of the other leaders don't do that. And so that's all right. They're slowly learning. You can help them. And after a couple of years, 5% of my leaders were trained apprentices. 1 year later, 10% of my leaders were trained apprentices. Another few years, 50% of my leaders. If you can hang in there long enough, over about a 7 or 8 year period, 100% of the leaders were trained apprentices. That's my suggestion as to how to do it. You do it slowly, but you can actually train the new ones. Before anyone new comes on, you can sign them up for a new contract. So this whole stuff in this here, we have our vision in there, we want them to know that. All sorts of stuff. I believe that it's not stapled. This is going to be fun, there's no page numbers on it. And I just realised I've started sorting this. I've got to finish this, otherwise it will come in the wrong order. But this is something every new leader gets, and we have a session where we work through it. So they simply understand what we're expecting, and they think, oh my goodness, I can't do that, I don't want to sign up. So even before you start looking after them, you can actually help them by explaining to them, oh look, there are page numbers. Hang on, I'm up to page 19, I'm almost there. I couldn't find a stapler, so I've just got to get this back into order. And then
can I just say something while they're
page numbers? Yes, absolutely.
I think perhaps with you, you stayed in, or you were hanging on in there because you knew that you were there for a long time.
Yep.
And you're talking about training for about 5 years, but what about a person who has come to, for example, in my case, the contract that I had was for about 3 years, and I was coming from a totally different country altogether. And so how can you space your time as in, you know, focusing on training leaders when you know that by the time you finish maybe getting the break, you're going to be moving on and there'll be another year process?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the percentage of these guys who are here and how long they've stayed in the churches, but I'd like to believe that most of them, I'm sure, move on maybe after 3 years, or after 3 years you move on to another church.
I think that makes it hard, and I would chip away at changing English culture. When I went to my current position, which I've been at for 19 years, I did have two other churches under my belt, at which I had stayed for 5 years each. When I came to this church, and I said, how long are you thinking of to employ me? And they said, well, our standard is you come for 3 years. I said, if that's the standard, then I understand that. But I said, if it's less than 5 years, it's not worth employing me. Because I think it takes at least that long to set a new direction. So that's on the big scale. I'd actually chip away at that one and let people know you can't change the direction of youth ministry inside 3 years. But if you're stuck with a three-year deal and you can't get out of it, then simply you've got to take them at least one step along the way. You may not be able to complete the picture, but if you could give a blessing to the next person who comes in, that they will inherit a leadership team that is better equipped than what you... Even if the direction's not set yet, you've done the basic training, raised the bar, discipled your leaders, loved them, done some of the other things you're about to talk about, and the next person who comes in inherits a team which is two steps further along being a great team than what you inherited, hopefully they'll have half a brain at least, and we'll take them on. But if I were in that situation, I would just want to take them one step or two along the way. But seriously, let's try and change the culture so that 3 years is seen as an accident that happens occasionally. You simply cannot change a youth culture in 3 years. It's just impossible. Now, doing it for 3 years is better than not doing it. So if that's all you've got, work it. Now, I don't know if that's helpful, but if I were doing it, I would just want to take them at least one step along the path. But I wouldn't stop me doing this. Because if you're doing this sort of stuff, then the person who comes in, unless they're incredibly foolish, will keep it going and will massage it to fit where they're going. Is that helpful? So that's talking about the operational guidelines, simply what is expected of them. Number six, equip them with the skills they need. Equip them with the skills they need. If you're asking them to teach the Bible, guess what? You've got to get them trained to teach the Bible. Maybe you can do that. Maybe your vicar can do it. Maybe you bring them to a conference where they'll be trained. But don't give anyone a job ever without instructions on how to do it. That is a recipe for disaster. Whether you're painting the church hall or bringing kids to Christ, you've got to show people what they need to do and how to do it. So, you don't have to come up with this yourself. There's plenty of courses available. If you're not sure, contact Tim at the Good Book Company. He'll let you know which Christian organisation is doing what. That could actually help train your leaders. So, whatever job you're asking them to do, equip them with the skills. Okay, all the quick and easy stuff out of the way. This is the fun bit. Number 7. Learn to listen. This does not come intrinsically natively to Australians. Learn to listen to your leaders. They need to know that you're hearing what they say. Now, we're not going to spend a whole amount of time on this. I could take a whole seminar on how to listen. But can I give you the best clues I have ever got on this one? When your leaders tells you something, they're not looking for the answer, they're looking to be understood. By the way, this applies to every human being. It applies to your kids, it applies to your husband or wife, it applies to your best friends and your drinking mates. When they tell you something, they're not mainly looking for a buddy, 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 buddy. But if you practice doing it, you'll be 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 practice doing it, you'll find that your leaders under your care know that you love them because you took the time to check that you heard them. So a leader says to you, I think our youth program is boring. Just before you leap in and defend yourself, you say, well, bet you couldn't do better. Just before you deal with your own emotional insecurities with them, can I suggest you pause and take a moment to check that you've got their information. And you say back to them something like, sounds like you're saying that what we do could be more fun. Now, if that's not right, they'll say, no, it's not that it's not more fun, it's just the same every week. Okay, sounds like you're saying maybe we should have some more variety. Yes. Now, when you get the yes from them, they know that you've heard them. Now, that might seem artificial and tedious, but can I tell you, you can solve so many of your leadership problems by simply taking that step. If we had a whole session on how to listen, we'd actually practice it. But as we're focusing on looking after leaders, learn to listen. So step one when you're listening is try and feed back to them what you think they just said in slightly different words. You can't make it exactly the same, or you look like the village idiot. If they say, I think our youth group's boring, and if you say, so, it sounds like you think our youth group is boring. You sound like the village idiot. But if you can just vary the wording a little bit, they know that you have heard them. And when you've got a leader, and think about the people who lead you, doesn't it make the world of difference when you know they just listened to what you said and weren't just thinking of an answer? Because usually when sometimes someone's saying something to me, I'm looking at my reply. I'm looking at my answer. Just before you do that, number one, reflect back to them what you think they've just said until you get the yeah. It's okay to have a couple of goes at it. And then secondly, let them know it's okay to feel that way. Man, if I was in a group that I felt was boring, I think I'd be frustrated too. Which is a whole lot better than you shouldn't feel that way. Maybe they should feel that way, but they do. So simply let them know it's a reasonable response. And then step three is, tell me a bit more about it. Do you see how it's open-ended? It's letting them set the agenda. So reflect back to them what you think they've just said. Let them know, understandable they feel that way, and then ask them to tell you some more. If you want to practice that with me, just grab me some time and we'll just have it. Now, you don't do it about things like, could you pass the salt, please? So, it sounds like you want the sodium chloride to move in your direction. Boy, if I wanted salt and didn't have it, gee, I'd be, no. But whenever it starts, give me the stupid salt. Whenever they're raising something that has an emotion involved, do the reflective listening and you will be listening. If you're not sure about it, talk to me. Sit next to me at the middle table and we'll practice. We can do it. Number eight. Yeah, we can do this. Encourage them wholeheartedly. Now, I don't understand enough about British culture. Australian culture is not an encouraging culture. American culture is, by the way. If I want to feel good, I'll go to America for 2 weeks. Seriously. Stay at a hotel, do anything. I will come back feeling like I'm a special, important, valued person. And that'll keep me going for another 5 years wherever in Australia goes. Because the Americans are just the most wonderful, affirming, supportive culture that you can come across. I don't know where the Brits fit into this one. Australia's a drag-down culture. That is, the way you say you like someone is by paying out of them, you know, saying something nasty about them. And it's awful. We criticise everything. If you've got leaders on your team, they need encouragement. They need to know that something of what they're doing is good. Even if you've just given them a task and they've mucked up most of it, can you find the one thing they didn't muck up? Peter? Pete?
Yeah.
One thing I loved about what you did tonight, you gave it your heart and soul. Now, I'm just holding off the fact that, you know, you taught the Bible badly, you didn't discipline the kids, and you should have stopped the ice cream fight before it got into the church building. I'm just holding that off at the moment, and starting with, you put your heart and soul in there. I'll talk about correcting in just a moment, but you can encourage. Now, once again, we can do a whole seminar on encouraging, maybe one day in the future, but let's just do the three steps real quick, or really quickly for those who understand that verse. Can you write down these three phrases? Number one, I see. That is, it's not a word. Number two, I feel. Number three, I believe. I see, I feel, I believe. This is how you encourage the socks off someone. I see is just an observation. You don't have to use the term I see, but while you're learning, you can. Simple observation. Pete, now this is genuine stuff. I've been to Pete's part of the world, I've had dinner at his place, I've sat down with him and talked through youth ministry. That were old friends from a week ago. Peter, I can see that you're passionate to get the right focus in the youth ministry. It's a simple observation of what you notice. By the way, if that's the only bit you ever do, that's good. But let's have fun with the next two steps. I feel is your reaction to what you've just seen. The fact that a person's doing that, what effect does it have on you? And I just feel so excited that you're taking what you're doing that seriously. It encourages me. Can you see that's the I feel? I see just an observation, a factual observation of what you've noticed. I feel is your reaction to what you've noticed. And it adds a personal touch. Now, here's the fun one. I believe. This is where you get to be a bit pathetic. This is where, I don't know if that's an acceptable spiritual gift in the United Kingdom. It's in the Bible, but you know, I know in some churches it's just not kosher, that's probably not a good term. My church wouldn't talk about prophetic gifting really much. And you don't have to. I believe simply means, what do you think might happen if that person keeps doing what they're doing well? What might happen in the future? Have a guess if you want. If you keep putting that much passion into getting youth ministry right, thousands of students can have their lives changed. Now that's truthful. That's all truthful. I saw that. I felt that. I believe that. If you can take a moment to encourage your leaders and actually do the three steps with them, you will build a team that believes in what they're doing and knows that you appreciate them. And can I say with encouragement, do it privately and then do it publicly. Right? You've got a leaders meeting. Commend publicly the leaders who have just excelled brilliantly. What we do sometimes at our crossfire is, our senior high group is 4 years, year 9, year 10, year 11, year 12. We'll get one of those groups of leaders, and we put them in the middle of the circle, and we go around and say things that we are noticing that are good about the year 9 leaders. And the other leaders speak into their lives, and then we all lay hands on them and we all pray for them. So publicly we're affirming them. So do the private encouragement, just one-on-one, but do the public encouragement as well. And in front of others, you encourage individuals. I was at Holy Trinity Brompton. Does that mean anything to you when I say that? You know, it's an Anglican church. It's near South Kensington Tube Station. That's the best I can do. I have no idea where it is in relation to the rest of the world. I got off the train at South Kensington and found it. And I spoke to their... They have two youth groups. One's for younger youth, and that's called younger youth. And they have one for older youth, and that's called older youth. And they have a children's ministry, which is called CHTB, which is Children at Holy Trinity Brompton. Not creative, but descriptive. I spoke at their younger youth, and then after it, the vicar, Nicky Gumbel, and his wife had invited, this is an accident, I just happened to be there, had invited all the youth leaders to lunch at the vicarage. And they put on lunch for the youth leaders. Now, this doesn't happen every week. This is about a once-a-year thing. And at the end of it, Nicky got everyone together. Now, he doesn't have any connection. He doesn't do youth ministry. He doesn't run youth groups. He probably doesn't know most of the details of what happens. But with the team of 20, 30 leaders, however many it was, he sat down and said, "You guys are an amazing team. I keep hearing brilliant things. I have parents who come to me and tell me their kids' reaction to the work that you guys are doing. And I am thrilled with what you're doing to build the kingdom as you support the work of this church." Now this is the senior pastor, the vicar, talking to his youth leaders. And I'm thinking, this is brilliant stuff. And then he goes on, having commended them for the things they're doing, he then says, "What could we do here at Holy Trinity that would help you guys achieve your goals better? Are there some things that we could change so that you could do youth ministry better? What ideas are going through your head?" And I'm thinking, this is what a senior pastor should do. And it was brilliant. And apparently they do it with different ministry groups, in different months. Just to commend them, assure them, praise them, and listen to them. If you do stuff like that with your leaders, then you will build a team that loves to go with you. Because if you're a leader, you've got to have followers. And the sign of a great leader is not someone who attracts just followers, it's a person who attracts other leaders to work with them. People who say, "I like where you're going, and I like the way you're doing it, I want to come with you." So that's the learn to listen and encourage them wholeheartedly. I see, I feel, I believe. And once again, put a little encouragement, grab me a dinner or something, and we'll practice doing the three steps of encouragement. And we'll encourage the whole table, and they won't know what's going on. And then we'll send all of you to Tim's Chornograph as we go through the three sets individually. And imagine what that would do for him.
That would go wild. Where are we up to?
Step 9. We're doing it. Correct them gently. Number 9, correct them gently. Your leaders will always need some correction. And if you don't correct them, you do them a disservice. And if you correct them harshly, you lose them. So can I make this suggestion? The correction step comes after the encouragement step. I don't mean you artificially think of encouragement. You just, I'm sorry, picking on Pete because we're just old friends from, you know, way back. Let's imagine I want to say, you ran that game very badly. The fact that three boys broke into the next door neighbour's house while you were meant to be in charge of the game, and you didn't notice the police joining in the game and taking our kids away. And the very idea of ordering 6 dozen custard cream pies for supper was not a good idea after a game like that. And you need to correct him and actually say, next time you run the game, I think you should do it differently. Don't artificially think of encouragement, just as, you know, so, Pete, you're absolutely great guy, and gee, you're in that game now. I don't mean like that. But as you're sowing into him week in, week out, making deposits in his emotional bank, then you have the permission to make a withdrawal when it's time for correction. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay, you correct privately. Now I said you encourage privately and publicly. Correction is all privately. Even Jesus would call Peter aside. Peter, it's Peter. And correct him. Can I suggest three questions to ask of anyone you want to correct? Number one, how do you think it went? You've just seen the worst game ever played. So reflect. By the way, I should have said, wait a discrete amount of time. Don't do it. Like if a guy's at the front giving a message at your group, as they walk off, don't do the correction then. I actually used to wait about a week. We had a conference in 2005. We invited the world to show up and learn leadership from us. But we included stay for Friday night and watch Crossfire. You came in 99. This is a 2002, this one was. And at our junior high youth group, I had one of my volunteer leaders preach the message. And I don't know what overtook him, but his introduction to his message is he told a story about an erect penis. He described a school swimming carnival where a guy on the starting blocks wearing his Speedos got very embarrassed. And just in case we didn't get it, he did visuals. And I'm just sitting there dying. I'm thinking, just as the story's developing, I'm thinking, no, he's not going to, he is going to. And I had 50 leaders from around the world sitting in, and I had to have a debriefing session with them afterwards. So I get to the debriefing session, and I'm just saying, so, what do you think about junior high group? Silence. Eventually one of them says, what did you think of the opening story? And, you know, I had to confront Greg with that. I waited a week. Does that make sense? I waited a week. And I said, hey Greg, you know Crossfire last week? Thank you for doing that, buddy. How did you feel your message went? He said, oh, it was good. Had their attention. Wait a little bit, wait a bit of period of time to take the emotional heat out of it. You then reflect on something that happened rather than something that's current. Okay, how do you think it went? And sometimes they'll correct themselves at that page. They'll actually tell you what the problem was, and you don't have to say a thing. Yeah, okay, now that you say it, I think you're probably right. I think that maybe was an unwise choice. So, how do you think it went? And they might correct themselves. If not, step two, if you're going to do it again, what would you do differently? I ask Greg that question. He said, oh, I don't know. He said, maybe I could have made the conclusion a little punchier. So, if you're going to do it again, what would you do differently? Now, there's a suggestion in there that maybe they should do something different. And often at that stage, they'll correct themselves. I say, you know, if I did it again, I think I'd change this. You say, good idea. Third statement. What can I do that will help you next time you do it? What would you like from me? I just had to tell Greg, I said, Greg, your opening story on the swimming box, the erect penis. Do I tell stories like that when I preach? He said, oh, I thought it was a funny story. I said, yeah. And he said, go through. So you got the questions. How do you think it went? If you did it again, don't tell Tim, I talked to that already. He's not bringing any more Australians out here. How do you think it went? If you did it again, what would you do differently? And third one, how can I help you next time you do it? And do it privately. And let them know their value and their special story. It also, if you wait a little bit, it gets in the emotion out of what you're doing. What do you think you're doing? Go off and tell God all that stuff, so by the time you come, you've actually settled down a little bit. Okay? So correct them gently. Yes,
presumably that if you're doing it sort of a week later and you're doing it privately, that you can't bring other people in on the feedback. Because, I mean, at the moment...
No, I can't talk to them about it before I talk to the person.
Yeah, I mean that sometimes other people will see things that I wouldn't see. So how do you bring that in if it's done privately?
I'm sorry, I've missed something and someone else brings it to my attention, is that what you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, at the moment what we do in our feedback is that we do, after the session we talk about what went well, what could have been improved, but we talk about it as a team.
Yes.
And quite often it's other people that notice something.
Yeah, I would be cautious about what went wrong doing it that quickly.
Yeah.
It's a good exercise, very good exercise, but I am a little cautious about doing it quite that quickly.
Yeah.
We have a thing where we train our apprentices. These are the year 10s, year 11s. And the year 11 students, so they're 16, young, 17, are required to present a 3-minute testimony to get them used to sharing their story publicly. We have a microphone, get them used to the microphone, and they need to share a 3-minute story of how they came to Christ. And we equip them, and we train them, we show them how to do it. And afterward, we got in the habit of saying, okay, reactions from people, what would you like to commend about what that person was doing? And they give encouragements. I'd been away for a little while. One of my other leaders was leading it. I came back and I died because I said, okay, what would you like to commend? And I said, okay, what would you like to correct? And I'm thinking, no, not now. Not just after the kid has sat down. So, what you're doing is right. I was speaking from Australian culture. I don't know how the Brits deal with this. But I would hold back a little bit. On doing the corrections. Top of my head, I'd say, let's bombard these people. Let's talk about all the things that were great. Yum, 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 yum. Then I'd say, there's always room to do things differently, but we'll get that a little bit later. Right now, I just want to say, great night, good effort. You guys did well. By the way, when I'm coaching my football team, what are the same principles? Encourage publicly, correct, privately, and don't correct immediately after the event. What were you doing? That was the worst kick. You know, Chelsea free kick against Liverpool last week. I just wait a little bit. What am I paying you $200,000 pounds a week for? Just hold off a little bit. And then I'd prefer to do it privately rather than group.
Is there a danger that people almost fear the butt coming?
Possibly. I try never to say the word but. And not just the reason. You know, someone says, well, you did it pretty well tonight. You know the next word. Mm-hmm. And everything before the word but is cancelled. If you ever have to do that, can you put the word and? You actually did it really well tonight, and I think, you know, we could even do it better. Did you see, you're going to say the same thing, but the word but cancels every word that came before it. So that might happen, but I would prefer just to keep it on an encouraging note immediately, and then a little later on, I can actually say, hey, listen, how do you think we're talking last week? Yeah.
I just wanted to like reinforce that and say, like when we were at college, Ian Barker listened to our talks with youth groups and it was terrifying. And at the end, he, like, I think because some people are different, some people can take that thing straight away and have absolutely no problem with it. But emotionally, if someone says one bad thing about a talk I've just done, I don't hear anything.
Yes, because you're emotionally
vulnerable. And it is taking out the last block of everything and everything collapses.
Yeah.
And like, time later when you've lost that, you just need someone to put you together and say, well done, go home. And a few days later, you can start to actually unpack it.
Yeah.
But it's the emotional impact of the negativity, I think, for some of us.
Yeah.
Destructive, isn't it?
That's a very good point, and you will know whether your team can take it or not. And if you know it's absolutely not a problem, then keep doing it. But Australians tend to feel inferior. It just has to do with where we are in the world and our size and our impact on the world. So Australians are very sensitive about criticism because deep down we feel inferior to the whole world. That's why we put so much effort into sport, which is about the one area where we actually achieve something. But you can read your team, but if you're not sure, I'd go to the safety line and hold it off just a little bit. I had a couple of people.
Can I say that actually I don't think you can read your team in that respect?
Yeah.
I'm going back now sort of 25 years before I was a Christian. I was on a management training course, and I actually looked to everybody as though I was totally sorted. Now, I gather that I had something like 8 different praise things said after I did a video presentation. And one of those things was, in all his years of training, he had never seen such a competent 7-minute video presentation. And then I had one tiny criticism about timing. And I actually, honestly, didn't hear any of the praise. And as I looked totally together, totally coping, it wasn't until later that I collapsed. So I don't think we can assume that people are as secure as all that.
I think that's an excellent point. Well said. Appreciate that. I'm getting my over here.
I was just thinking maybe sort of a talk or that bit's quite personal, isn't it, to come back on that. But if you have sort of general structure of the meeting, things, it can be useful as a team to talk about, because lots of people can be learning and think we don't want the highest buzzy game just before our quiet, reflective prayers and that sort of thing. Do you think there's a difference? And that sort of thing, is it worth having
it? Yeah, look, there's not a black and white here. One way is always okay, one way isn't. And you've got to read people. My fear is, as Sue shared with us, that sometimes you think it was fine to say something that's a correction, and it actually isn't. I think you're going to make a mistake. I would tend to hold off from the corrections and just let a little bit of time elapse so that nobody is that emotionally vulnerable. The other thing that I found, sometimes when I wait, I actually think it's not worth correcting that. It was such a little thing in the course of time that it's not worth raising. Yes, sir.
Do you encourage them to give feedback to you about your talks?
Yes. It's hard to.
Yeah. How do you do that? Because you don't want to come across. I don't want to come across in my youth group as kind of, every talk I ever do is perfect, let me tell you how to do yours.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they're sitting there thinking, oh, I don't think I'll make it. Oh, I want to encourage. Have you ever had a leader turn up to you and say, Tim, I don't think you did that very well?
Yeah, yes. It's usually more specific.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you should have told that story.
Yeah.
Or, that was maybe a bit long tonight. I think many of our leaders would be a little cautious about doing that with me, but there's probably somebody they would tell who'd pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you're absolutely right. You're not Mr. or Mrs. Perfect correcting everybody else. We're all there to encourage and strengthen each other. But if you're going to correct, do it gently, do it privately, do a bit later, and remember the three steps. Last one, we can do this, number 10. Celebrate together! I'm sorry, that's not very British, is it? Set number 10. Have a cup of tea. Applaud every improvement. This is part of encouragement. But if that's the best way of doing it, and a person did it like that, but the previous time was like that, can you applaud the improvement? Every time you think it's a little bit better, just simply be lavish and applaud it. Share your life together with your leaders. Don't make it a professional thing, just see each other at the youth group. Have them over for a barbecue. English people have barbecues? Yes, yeah. Okay. Good. At the beach? On the pebbles? Go out on New Year's Eve and have a barbecue at the beach. Whatever the British equivalent is. Have them over. Take them in your car. If you go to a leaders thing, get a minibus and travel together. Do some stuff where you just share life together, have a party together, so you just enjoy each other and have fun and lots of food. Come on, the teams that are great to be on, there's always food in the assembly. Heaven is described as a banquet, so let's get ready for it. The time is nigh, so just before we close off, any last comments, questions about looking after your leaders? Yes, sir.
As I say, a lot of the last kind of three, potentially maybe for some of the guidance as well in this country, are quite countercultural. But actually, they're really essential to not only looking after our leaders, but our youth groups thriving. Mm. And like, we really need to make those efforts to do that, don't we? Because it all comes back to the first point, that the leaders are completely and utterly our first priority.
Okay, is he right that for British males, some of this is countercultural? It is for Australians. I didn't know what it was for Brits. But for blokes particularly, chaps, some of this is really hard because you're expressing emotion, and Australian blokes don't have any emotion, except when it comes to sport, cars or gadgets. Oh, and women. Yeah. But it's worth persevering there. It really is.
I just think that's related to all the wars we've fought. I think it's scared every man for himself, technically. And so the lesson I've learned is that I have to assume that everyone's far more sensitive than I am. If I treat them like I'm happy to be treated, I'm going to upset.
Everybody is more fragile than you think they are. That's what I've learned. Especially if you're a sort of person that can take the knocks, just remember, people are more fragile than you think they are. You are. And if you're not aware of that, you'll discover it to your horror when you've just shattered somebody with something you thought was nothing. And I think I did it to the Scots last night. I was trying to say nice things about Scotland, but because Australian sarcasm is so deadpan, I think it came out the wrong way. But I find that I have hurt people that I never meant to hurt. Young lady, young man, almost young man.
I've been kind of noticing that because I'm so much younger than so many people in my church who volunteer in the group, and who have been doing it for 10 years, 20 years, much longer than I have, and I haven't had any professional training in it either. So trying to lead them and kind of being in a position where I am coordinating and leading them, how do I do that? How do I... where does my authority come from? How do I correct them when I know no more than they do?
I think that's a hard one. That's a difficult situation. When I first left school, I worked at Grace Brothers, which is a department store. You know, Marks and Spencer's, that sort of thing. And I worked in furniture. And I was department manager in a furniture section. And I had two full-time staff members. Ted, who was 56, and the shop steward for the union. And Bill, who was 63, both had been selling furniture all their life, and Bill, who was 63, used to be a department manager until he couldn't take the stress of it and went back to being a salesman, but still had supervisor's privileges and still was on a supervisor's wage. They were my two staff members. I was a 21-year-old who didn't know anything about furniture. So the way I dealt with that was I kept asking their advice. Even if deep down I was thinking, oh, that's not quite what we're after, I'd say, look, you've been selling furniture so much longer than me. How would you deal with that one? Once they know that you're listening and you're asking advice and you're not just being the young, brash person doing it your own way, I think you earn the rights for you to say, you know, I'm wondering if there's a different way to do that. How about we try this? But I would have everything with lots of words like perhaps and maybe and try, because you know what old people are like in with wise younger people. So if you're a young person and you have the gift of wisdom, what you really need is wisdom as to how you use it. Because older people don't like wisdom in younger people. It's very threatening. If you're not an older person, you won't understand this. But if you're a young person who has wisdom, and I think you do, then you need wisdom as to how you communicate that. And I always actually coach people, you know, on our team, how to use words like perhaps and maybe and let's try and I wonder, just to soften it a little bit. So that's what I'd do. Now, others might have other ideas. We need to stop this in a moment, but if you want to feedback some other ideas, you can. But I'd be asking lots of advice and then just trying to gently moderate it if I think it's wider than me. Last couple. Who was in? I had somebody here.
Well, actually, that was my question, and the answer is very helpful.
Okay. Last one was somebody down here.
I was just going to say that maybe like the 11th one is that occasionally we need to apologise to our leaders as well and humble ourselves.
Yep. Absolutely. I could have done 20. I had stopped at 10. But absolutely. We're going to stop because in 9 minutes we have what's called supper. Supper in Australia means, you know, coffee and a biscuit before you go to bed. But I believe it's called supper. Dinner, tea, those sort of stuff. Okay, thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Go for